The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
So they were together, you know, my dad passed, he'll be 96 now. So 1930 he was born. And Ken is 88, but they were together over 50 years.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing. And they did get married later. They moved to Palm Springs. They were 50%, you know, half the year in Palm Springs, which was awesome for them. And it was very gay. They got married. I think my dad was 88, finally.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, they had the gay marriage and it was beautiful.
Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. This show that has been highlighting, celebrating, uplifting, and normalizing LGBTQIA plus families for 23 seasons and counting, y'all. Yeah, you heard that right. This is the first episode of our 23rd season. 23. That is a lot of episodes of queer family goodness. And y'all, I cannot think of a better way to kick off this new season than with today's guest. I had the privilege of sitting down with Melissa Poss Blake. Melissa grew up with two dads in the 70s and 80s, long before it was a thing that was ever even talked about. It's a really interesting conversation. Her story is beautiful, and her story is truly, truly, truly a testament to the fact that our children don't need, quote unquote, perfect families, nuclear families. What they really need is families where they feel deeply loved. And that's exactly the kind of family that I think most of us are building. So I think you're going to love this conversation. There were some really wonderful insights in it. I'm very excited to roll that tape. But before I do want to let you know, I did cut a pretty good portion of this conversation towards the end because we got into what Melissa does for a living, which is hypnotherapy, and we got into healing, and we got into parenting through hard seasons of life and everything that goes with the work she does, which is was a really riveting conversation, but it didn't really fit, you know, the main theme of the episode, which was queer family life, queer family goodness, and being a child of gay dads. So I cut that out, but I'm keeping it for you. I'm putting it up for free on my Patreon at the Queer Family Podcast. So if you're interested in hearing about just healing and guidance on parenting a little bit, head to my Patreon. It's there for free. You can watch it or listen to it. And you get to hear that part of the conversation. You'll get something out of it, I promise. But I just wanted to make this episode flow nicely. So anyway, that's to be said. We've all been having a great summer here. I hope you all have too. We're headed into a really amazing season. I have some great episodes lined up for you. I cannot wait to share them all. And I've been having fun on social media at the Queer Family Podcast on all the channels all summer long. I pissed off a bunch of misogynistic men in one of my posts just because I said that girls' soccer or football could possibly be more entertaining than men's. Ay, ay, ay. But I've been pissing off some men, and I love men. I just don't like misogynistic, patriarchal men. Let's break that cycle. So I hope you've been following me on social media. Anne has made much of a bigger presence in social media lately. So you get to see family shenanigans over there. So don't forget to keep following there. I will always keep you posted on what's going on in the Kellwoods family clan. And sometimes it's wild and sometimes it's pretty mundane with a lot of Yeti cups thrown about here and there. It's always very lesbian. Anyway, and Birkenstocks. I don't know. Anyway, let's roll the tape. It is a great conversation. I think you're going to love this. And happy season 23, y'all. What? Had no idea this would run this long. Had no idea. And yet here we are. Thank you for tuning in, y'all. Couldn't have done it without you. All right, tell some friends about it. Let's get some more audience members, shall we? All right, here we go. Let's roll the tape. Helen Beulah. I need you to start working again, darlings. Yep, I need you to put the cigarettes down. The whiskey will be there for you when you come back from just pressing the button. Just roll the tape for me, would you? Okay, all right. They're not really interested in working yet because they're mad that I'm making them come back to work in the middle of summer, but We got episodes to put out, y'all. All right, let's roll the tape. Helen and Beulah are not real. I have nobody in this house with me. Okay, here we go.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
It's lovely to have you here. Thank you for joining. I'm excited for what we're going to dive into today. It's going to be a good chat, I think.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited as well.
Awesome. Okay, so without further ado, let's get right into what I just warned you about, your 30-second elevator pitch.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, ready, set, go.
Hi, I'm Melissa, and I have a different story. I'm coming here to you guys with a different perspective. So I am 60, and my mother died when I was 6 years old, and my dad came out when I got engaged. So same partner, 50-something years. So I grew up in a gay household back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and 90s. And I'm just coming to you for fun with a different perspective of being in a gay household from the child. There you go.
I love it. Boom. Amazing. You went slightly over, but we covered a lot of ground there. So thank you. And I'm really excited because I do get very excited when children of queer parents reach out to me, because there is always just this little part in me that maybe sometimes worries, oh God, am I going to screw my kids up because of this whole gay thing? I don't think so, but it's always nice to hear the perspective of children who grew up with gay parents and hear their take on their lives with their queer parents.
With my business, right? It's all about perspective and choice, right? So looking back at even like these, you know, imprints, I wanted my mom, I wanted my dad, and I got Ken. Now, in the moment, I wanted my mom, I wanted my dad, and I got Ken. But now looking back, I'm so grateful.
So grateful that you had three loving parents. You had Ken.
I could have had a step monster.
Yeah. You could have, but you got a really special one, which is really awesome.
I got an amazing man. Yeah.
You just alluded to your line of work, just to let everybody know you're a hypnotherapist, which we're going to kind of get into a little bit later too, and healing from trauma and things. Because I think a lot of us at home could use some healing and figure out ways to heal. Okay, so let's go into it, because your mother died when you were really young, and you said your dad came out when you got engaged, but you lived in a gay household. So can we go into that? Let's start there and dig in from there.
You know, when you're six, you're just a kid and you're immature and you don't know anything. So I personally did not know any different. Obviously, my mom died. You know, it was a long battle. She got sick when I was a baby with cancer. And she, you know, she passed in 1972. So really long time ago. And cancer has changed. I mean, my sister has beat it. We had the BRCA gene in our family, and my niece has beat it, and everything's different. But children don't understand death or cancer. And then as my life evolved, I think I did have a time where when I was really little, that I thought my life was a dream and I was going to wake up and my mom was going to be there.
Oh.
And that is not something I talk about often, but I think my dad needed a change and to just picked up and moved the whole family. So I have an older brother and I have an older sister, and they're 6 and 8 years older than I am. So they had a different life than I did, because they got much more of my mother, and my mother was sick. So bumping along, you know, my dad was busy. He was busy, you know, worrying about my sister and brother as they moved to being teenagers. And Ken is my dad's partner, and I call him my other dad. He is my parent. I love him dearly. He's almost 88 now. He just moved kind of close to me to assisted living. That's a whole nother story. I see him almost every day, and it makes me want to cry. And Ken read me my stories and got me my snack and gave me my, you know, my showers and my baths. And we had this family unit that was amazing. I mean, my dad was very colorful. He was the director of the Illinois Arts Council, then the Florida Arts Council. So they were artsy fartsy. And we did all sorts of fun things. We went to opera season in Santa Fe, New Mexico for a month. We were very cultured. anyway, we did have sit-down dinners every night. That was a big thing and part of our family. And, you know, I did play sports. You know, my dad didn't really know what he was doing because that wasn't his world. But he was very supportive, very loving. Mm-hmm. The 70s, we moved to Florida from Chicago, right? Different world, very totally. Even, you know, Christian. Mm-hmm. And they did not come out. So they pretended and they dated and stayed in the closet.
But it sounds like Ken was always in your life. Like, was Ken in your life even when your mom was around?
Yes. Oh, yes. So we were in Chicago and my mother introduced Ken to my dad.
Oh, so your mother knew.
Well, I've asked best friends before, you know, in the last 10 years or 15 years, did she know? One best friend said yes. One best friend said no of hers. And so I stayed, but she had to have known or she just assumed he was bisexual, right? Because from what I heard, he was a great husband. He was a great lover. You know, and I found some funny things that maybe a little girl shouldn't have found.
Yeah.
That I'm not going to get into right now, unless you push me. You know, gay wasn't a thing when you were a little girl in the 70s in Florida. And then we moved to Indiana, by the way, which is a whole nother animal.
Other thing.
We moved to IU, which was Indiana University, which had a very large gay population. I didn't know that then. But, you know, it just, what you don't know, you don't know. And it felt normal and loving. And we were really well taken care of.
Yeah, it sounds like you had a really wholesome childhood and most of our kids do because we're just, you know, our families are just like any other family. But I'm curious to know so after your mom passed away and you're with dad and Ken is around the whole time, when you don't know, you don't know, I get it. But when did you realize that Ken was more than... I don't know. What did you what was your reasoning for why Ken was always around?
So back then, okay, this was the 70s and 80s. As I said, you know, what you don't know, you don't know. We didn't talk about gay or gay and lesbian or anything. So back then, my dad, because my mom died, Ken was my legal guardian. Maybe not my sister and brother, because they were older and they were on their way. But Ken was my legal guardian. There's a lot of twists and turns there because...
I know. I want to know.
As life went on, I think Ken adopted me. And then, you know, there were some twists and maybe he adopted. I mean, it was like my dad is my dad, but he's also my brother. Or, I mean, Ken, you know, the whole... I'm joking. But there was all these twists and turns with the guardianship. Mm-hmm. Because my dad didn't, you know, my grandmothers were both involved in my life. My grandmother on my dad's side, my Nana on my mom's side. And I think my Nana especially was like, what is going on here? So that's part of why I think they moved. And, you know, even like I went to a Catholic school in the third grade. That's when I moved from second grade from Chicago and went to a little private school in Chicago and then to a Catholic school. But I didn't know my prayers, right?
Yeah.
Because how would I? I mean, was behind. But my grandmothers were like, well, is she going to do this and do that? So getting back to Ken legally adopted me because my dad, if something ever happened to him, my grandmothers would just take me and put me with my Aunt Lolly or put me with, you know, my Uncle Greg or whatever.
So you were one of the first like arguments for why we need second parent adoption. Exactly that.
Okay.
Like that's okay. Like, this is why, I mean, we all have to do second parent adoption just to protect our kids in case something happens to one of us. Because you never know what the in-laws are going to do. You never know what family members are, right? So.
Okay, I didn't know that that was a thing. So, yes, I was second parent adopted.
You were before it was a thing. But it's a really great argument for why we have to do it. Because they were doing it to make sure that you got to stay in your family unit and not be taken by grandmas who wanted you to be raised Catholic or whatever, you know?
Yes.
Right. Second parent adoption, it's a big thing for our community. And it's an annoying thing that we have to do, but we do it to protect our families. So they were living, but they were together. Just nobody knew. Nobody really, your siblings didn't know it either?
My siblings knew before I did. So they, in Florida, Ken and my dad had like the Jack and Jill bathroom.
Uh-huh. Oh, so they had separate rooms.
Yes. Always separate rooms, by the way. Oh, and they were protective.
God, that's had to have been so hard.
Yeah, it had to be so hard. The Jack and Jill, I can actually picture it. You know, I'm very visual. I had one memory, and I'll tell the audience about, you know, what I do. But I did some healing around, I didn't know what I was healing, but I had a really bad ear infection when I was little, and swimmer's ear. And I was crying in the night, and I don't know where my dad was, but I went to Ken, and I cried the whole night, and he took care of me. Aww. And that was so much love there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And looking back at that, moving to different houses, like I got, when I was a little girl in Bloomington, Indiana, I got my own bedroom. I had like the master bedroom because I had my own bathroom, and they had rooms and shared. But I was still like a kid. Yeah. We didn't talk about it. And I'm sure parents, okay, I'm sure that there were parents who were like, you know, in these small towns in Indiana and Florida were like, what's going on with that family? Mm-hmm. What, you know, what's going on? And, you know, were the kids allowed to come over to my house and play? I never had a problem with that.
Okay, that's good to hear.
Yeah. And my dad would fuss. He would make, you know, crepe Suzettes, and he would, because he did throw a great party.
I mean, yeah, he was
did.
Gay. And I mean,
we had 14 sets of china. I mean, yeah,
of course
growing
you
up,
did.
He was all about it.
Of course.
And Ken
did.
Was in the arts as well. So they were very artsy. I mean, the kids loved coming to my house because my dad would kind of fuss. He would go the extra effort and with more like with the cooking or something pretty or, but yeah, I never in my whole life when I was a kid ever walked in on anything inappropriate or them being close.
Yeah.
There was nothing that I was like, oh, they're gay.
Right.
I did think in the story in my mind, which I was started to tell, when I was a little girl, my dad was engaged before my mother, and that woman died. I mean, like she, before they got married, like she had some terrible, like crazy thing, and she died. And then my mother died. So in my mind, like, oh, he just doesn't ever want to be with it. This is just the little story in the little girl's mind with another woman because love hurts too bad.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a perfect sense story-wise.
Yeah. So that's what, nobody told me that. I made that story up.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely dated. They had some, especially in Bloomington, but in Tallahassee, you know, there were dance parties and they were fun.
Yeah. But you don't think they were actually out to anyone. Like maybe they had a community of people.
They definitely had a community in Bloomington, Indiana, where there was a large gay population because there were the ladies who came over. There was an opera singer and her partner, Jean, and they for sure, you know, and we'd go on the boat with Jean and her partner, and they were for sure gay. And their friends, I mean, I can pick Barney and Jay and the head of the French department and even Herman Wells, we I'm assuming was a gay man, and he was the chancellor of the university.
Right. So they found a community. They just couldn't be out to your school, your outer family, you guys. I wonder if, you know, as time was going on, I wonder if they just kind of assumed that you children just kind of got it without having to do the whole coming out thing with you.
I do think that, I mean, looking back and seeing what I see with my business. So I'm a hypnotherapist. My brother is 8 years older. And I do think some of his coping strategies and the way he is because he was like proving I'm a man.
Uh-huh.
Because he loves sports so much.
Right.
And he loves women so much. Right. I mean, like he's in the, He's in the leather business. He has two daughters, and that Michelle's initials are MVP. And he has a daughter named Michelle and Jordan, Michael MVP. Jordan, right?
Wow. So he went like in the opposite direction. You know, it's funny. I think about that a lot with my son because we're two moms. And I think my son is, he's eight, so he's still young, but I think he is trying to discover what it means to be a boy or a male in this world that he lives in with two moms. And I do feel like he goes harder in the other direction. He's picking up that masculinity from the streets and kind of discovering what it means on his own. And we're trying to guide him towards a softer version, but he is definitely, and so I see what you're saying about your brother. He is definitely taking it to a further degree than I think he might have if he'd had a father figure in his life. Not to say he's hurt for it or he's the worse for this at all. I just think that he's coming to his masculinity in an interesting way.
Yeah. And don't forget, we form beliefs and come to conclusions about ourselves and the world when we're young.
Right.
So those first 8 years are so impressionable.
Yeah.
They're so impressionable. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, six, seven, eight. Yeah. You know, the thing is also just people listening with kids, knowing what I know from my business, you can explain things really well instead because the child does not understand. And often it's a misunderstanding. But if you slow down and there's something that you really want to explain to them, slow down and really explain it to them so they do understand. Mm-hmm. Because we create a misunderstanding in our mind.
Interesting. Yeah. So that's interesting. So your brother kind of developed his personality based on his childhood. And
I mean, I'm not psychoanalyzing him.
No.
I just see his, you know, he's proving or has, you know, I mean, he's 68 years old now. Okay. And he's amazing. And he's the best dad ever. He's got this beautiful family and he's so loving, but he also had to show his masculinity. Yes.
Well, it sounds like he had two great dads as models too. So of course he would be a great dad because he had great models, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's a great dad.
Love is love is love is love.
Okay. So very interesting. So, you know, and I know you can't speak to your siblings' experience of it and when they realized it, but it sounds like you kind of weren't in on the secret, but you were living this wonderful, very rich family life. But there was a part of who your family was that you were kind of not privy to. You were kind of in the closet yourself. You just didn't realize, but not hurt for it.
Not hurt for it at all.
Yeah.
I actually think I'm very gay proud and I think I have a bigger perspective. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it's a better perspective, but it's bigger. You know, I think it's better. A perspective of love and what, you know, love is love and raising a child in a toxic relationship where parents fighting. Ken and my dad, their name was Ken and Leonard, and they called themselves Kennard, which is very cute. And they had Kennard Farm. Later, they had a farm, and they moved to Palm Springs in their later in life. But you know, I had harmony in my life. I mean, they argued about directions. They didn't really argue about other things, or I don't recall those things. I mean, there were definitely some, you know, some crazy going on. There was not yelling in my house or. Which, you know, is a good thing.
Yeah.
And the having the family dinners, like looking now what you see, and, you know, that was old school, but we sit down to dinner and we had manners. And on Sundays, sometimes we would get dressed up, meaning in like they would wear tuxedos or we would do Chinese, like a Chinese and an Asian dress for Asian dinner. Or we would put on the beret if we were having French food. They made it fun.
We sit down to eat every night as well. It's a big thing. But that's a fun idea. Like Sunday is special day and we dress up or something. I like that. I might steal that. I really like that. That's fun. Leave it to the gays to find the fun. Okay, so really interesting. And, you know, you grew up in a gay family at a time, like you said yourself, when gay wasn't a thing. We didn't talk about gay. Your dads sounds like they had a wonderful love, a wonderful relationship and also had to keep it hidden, which is heartbreaking. So when did they, you said they came out when you got engaged. So how did that go?
There was a lot to it. Okay. So they, at this point, they're in Indiana and they had a gentleman's farm in Indiana. My sister and brother were both married and I'm again, the youngest. And my dad was like, oh, you know, when I got engaged, it was 1993 or 92. And he's like, let's have an engagement party, you know, or let's have, and my husband has passed.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. A lot of loss. Let's have Pat's family to come to Indiana, come to the farm and, you know, and celebrate. And that was when I think, you know, it was still early in the 90s and I was fine with them, but I think I was protective of, oh, you know, can you guys sleep in different rooms? Because they were sleeping in the same room.
They were out to you by this point.
They weren't out, but they were.
But you knew
never,
it.
We just didn't talk about it.
But so when.
Yes, I knew. Yeah.
But when did the realization, do you remember when the realization set in for you when you were like, oh.
Well, once you know something, you can't unknow it. Mm-hmm. When did I know? I think when I was in high school and I lived in Carmel, Indiana. I moved a ton. Okay.
Sounds like.
From Bloomington to Indiana. Yeah. Moved a lot of schools. And that was actually very hard. Moving schools was hard.
I can imagine.
When I think they were away, they were on a trip and they would leave me alone, which was cool. You know, I would have parties. So I had this kegger at my house and everybody's drunk and the whole thing. And, you know, I'm also the youngest. So they were over it and they trusted me. And
you're a latchkey kid. I
was a very good girl. And I worked and I babysat and I got good grades and the whole thing.
I'm a little younger than you, but I grew up in the 80s and 90s and I was on my own a lot. I had a really wonderful family and childhood, but we had a lot more freedom.
It was different. Yes. Yes. So I remember maybe I was having a party and people were sitting around the kitchen table and they asked me, you know, I think that's when it was the first discussion and maybe my best friends asked me, but nobody cared.
Right. But they just asked. And is that when you were like, oh, I guess they are.
Yeah, probably. But then I would also say to them this story in my mind, maybe, but I'm not mm-hmm. sure.
Right.
But my dad also was engaged and the woman died before my mother died and they date kind of, mm-hmm. and they are, you know, and with love call them the fruit nut club, you know, they're fruity and nutty as every family is. So I think it was more of I knew, but we didn't talk about it. Now I will jump into when I was dating my husband and there were other, you know, I only had one real boyfriend before. My husband and my dad really liked him. My husband and my dad kind of butt heads. But I remember, and I am so not a big drinker at all, but I remember if I had a cocktail, I was more likely to be able to share that my dad's gay. And that looking back at that, like, you know, I think I just had to take that inhibition away. And now, you know, it was just a different time. And I was in my 20s. And it was the 80s and 90s, and AIDS had just come out, the whole thing.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about AIDS because 90s, yeah, you were right, 80s, 90s. But I don't want to go there yet. I still want to kind of stay in this moment for a second because I do find it interesting that you kind of had to take the inhibition away, like with a drink or a cocktail to actually kind of say it out loud or maybe admit it. And so that internalized homophobia, you know, was kind of a part of you as well because it was a different time.
Yeah, it was. I was going to be judged.
Yeah, right. Because you're gay dads, which is another argument for why podcasts like this are so important and for why visibility is so important so that families like ours can raise our children with pride in their families.
Absolutely.
and the tools with which to speak about their families. And so you were kind
Absolutely.
Of in a you were and not by anybody's fault, like it was society's fault, but you were put in a position to have to out yourself and to deal with that internalized shame, which is terrible and so sad.
It is terrible and it is sad. And I'm glad that it's changed, or I hope that it's changed. I truly hope that it's changed, because I don't look at it now at all with any shame. Like I said, I'm so proud. And I mean, I love telling my little backstory. I do. I'm very proud of it.
I know. And it's a really fascinating story, a beautiful story. And you actually have, as a straight woman, have the experience of having had to come out. The fear of coming out, telling, you have that experience, telling the people you love your truth, which is the fact that your dads were a couple. So you came out. And our children, I talk about this sometimes too. Our children have to learn.
Yeah, I've never looked at it that way.
Yeah, and our children have to learn how to come out. This is a tool that they have to learn, because inevitably, as they go about the world, they're going to have to explain to people, no, I have two moms. No, I have two dads. No, my dad is trans. You know what I mean? So our children have to develop the strength and the pride within themselves and in their families to handle that kind of a diving board moment, so to speak, because it's not easy, right? And you had to do it blind. So you really had a coming out. I feel like you really had a coming out experience having to tell people about your truth.
That's interesting. And I love your diving board, because I will say often I need a push in the pool.
Yeah.
But that, looking back at that, I remember like thinking, okay, I had to, there's some resistance in telling someone. And, you know, I'm not proud of that.
None of us are. But, you know, first comes the admitting it to ourselves, then comes the getting the strength up to tell others, and then comes the healing and the loving and the realization that, oh my God, it's actually beautiful.
But
we got to go through the steps, many of us. And some of the young people today have no issue coming out and it's not a thing, which, yay, hallelujah. It's working.
Yay,
right?
Hallelujah. Yeah. Yeah.
But
I have a niece who came out, my sister's daughter. And when I told my kids, they were like, okay. Like, yeah, okay. Like that was,
and?
It was like, and yeah.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
it was, and I loved that. I loved
that's,
that.
That's so, what we want.
Like Kara. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's
not that
we
they were like, not how, you know, there was no, it was just no, it was fine. It was good. It was good, you know.
It's like she pierced her ears. Okay, cool. What's for dinner? Like,
yes.
That's what we want. We want it to not be such a big thing. And it is getting to where it is. We're getting there. And then also we're going backwards in many ways too, because of the world we're living in. I mean, did your dads ever actually say to you, we are a couple and we're in love? Like, or was it just kind of...
Okay, I'm having this little memory. No, he never, I mean, I knew he was gay. I just knew it. There was not a conversation, but I remember I was having a big birthday party for my dad, and maybe he was either 70 or 80. Okay. And, you know, they had the farm in Indiana. I never lived on the farm. It was a beautiful place, but they had shotguns there, by the way, because it was really near Martinsville, which was the home of the Ku Klux Klan. So they had a little bit of fear.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a whole nother thing.
Oh God.
When I was having this party for my dad's birthday, he did a toast, but it was like going back in time. There's a word for it. I just can't think of it. And he was basically thanking Ken for all his love and support and this and that. It was my dad's, on his birthday, he gave us little gifts for his birthday. Very little, like a Clinique free bag or something. But he did this, I'm going to think of the word, and it was basically thanking Ken, but it went back and it was to everybody. And like my son Jack's friend was there, and they were like 13 or 14, so however long ago. And he was with Ken, you know, before my mother died. So the timeline. So they were together, you know, my dad passed, he'll be 96 now. So 1930, he was born. And Ken is 88, but they were together over 50 years.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing. And they did get married later. They moved to Palm Springs. They were 50%, you know, half the year in Palm Springs, which was awesome for them. And it was very gay. They got married. I think my dad was 88. Finally.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They had the gay marriage and it was beautiful. And I mean, I have pictures on my Instagram of the, my sister did the wedding and it was beautiful. It was at their farm outside and the whole family was there. It was very colorful.
Oh, that's good. That's nice that they made it there, that they got that.
Yeah, they got married. And my dad was in the Army. So Ken actually, you know, that was a tough thing later after my dad passed that Ken got the VA insurance. Like it was a fight. Yeah.
Oh, well, because they were married.
Or the benefits. Yes. Yeah. But
I know it's hard even just for us, my mother, because my dad passed away about 6 years ago and he was in the Navy as well. So she had to really fight hard to get that insurance. They tried to not give it to her. So I can only imagine how much harder it probably was for Ken.
So he did not get the insurance, but he's getting the benefit, the little bit of money, which is even better. It took a long time.
Yes. And it wasn't easy.
No.
But oof. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So
that's a big made deal. It.
Yeah. And they lived, they lived pretty long lives considering they were gay men coming up in the 70s, 80s, 90s through the AIDS epidemic. They made it through.
Yes, and they did get rings. I want to say, okay, looking back in our conversation now, they had rings made probably a long, long time ago, and I just didn't have it on my radar. but they had like an artist make rings for them. Oh. And Ken's, my dad had, you know, I don't know, sapphire. My brother has my dad's ring. I will get Ken's ring. My Ken's ring has one diamond and three sapphires, and it's very masculine, but it's my dad and the three kids.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. So aww. They had those a long time ago. And I think that was a token of their love to each other.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't flamboyant about it or, you know, they were never flamboyant. I do remember when my husband met, it was Thanksgiving. We weren't married, but they met my dad and Ken, and my dad had a very deep voice and would give you a strong handshake, but they also wear bright colors. But Pat knew Ken, when Ken would have a drink, he would get a little bit more. Yeah.
A little looser.
Yeah. And my husband's like, oh, I could tell. I'm like, no, you can't. But I also lived with them my whole life. So I just, you know, I just lived it.
Your dads are your dads. Like you don't see, you know. Yeah, crazy. And so beautiful and amazing. And you had a great childhood, it sounds like, despite moving so much, which is its own thing.
There were the ups and downs. And, you know, everybody has stuff, okay? And everybody wears a mask. Mm-hmm. So was it being a kid? It wasn't easy. But looking back, I'm grateful.
Yeah.
I mean, I think not having a mother, just period, the end, is a hard thing for a little girl, 100%. Straight or gay. It doesn't matter. Not having a mother. And nobody ever changed the roles. So my dad was always my dad. He never changed his role. And Ken was my dad's partner, but he was my other dad. He was never my mother.
No.
Right? So there was different. And then even knowing that as my husband died, I never changed roles. I'm never going to be my kid's father. So having two mothers or having two fathers, as long as you have love, that's all that matters. I don't think you need, and all you really need is one really great caretaker, whether it's a grandmother, a mother, a father, you know, an aunt and uncle. I don't think it has to be
one of each. Yeah.
I don't
or
think
two.
It has to be anything with a title on it. I just think you need someone to love is love, and you need kids need people need to feel safe and secure and significant. That's really important to feel significant.
Yeah.
And to be seen and to be heard. And that's really what's important. It's not who's loving you. It's that someone is loving you, seeing you protecting you, keeping you safe.
Consistently.
Yeah, consistently.
I love that. That's so true. And I love what you said about, you know, your dad didn't become your mom. Ken didn't become your mom. You just had two dads, and that was what you needed. And at the same time, you were a little girl without a mom, and that didn't change that. It still is what it is. And you had a lot of love.
To be a little girl without a mom, or to be, you know, a motherless daughter. I mean, yes, I had a mother till I was 6 years old, but she was also sick. And now those are more of my wounds than growing up in a gay household, not having, like, having that. I mean, I have abandonment issues. I do. And I've looked at them.
Well, having had that taken away from you, right? Which is something that's a little different for, like, say my kids, because they didn't have, there was nobody there to begin with. So it was nothing was ever taken away. It was always these two parents.
And what they don't know, they don't know. That's exactly. Another good thing. And then when you know something like Santa Claus, or that your parents are different, then you have to untangle that, whatever that is for you.
Our kids are going to be all right, is what I'm hearing from your whole story. And I want to talk a little bit about healing, because you know a lot about healing. And
I do.
I think you have some insight that you could give to us and, you know, to me, to the listeners at home, and all the things, because we have many things we can heal from, despite the gay thing. Like, obviously, we're multifaceted people. You know, we got a lot of layers.
I am a clinical hypnotherapist, and I'm also a heart healing practitioner. I wear many hats. You know, I'm a mother. I'm a lover. I help people with Parkinson's disease. I teach Parkinson's wellness recovery. So I wear a lot of hats. But on the healing side of it, I don't think people know people, you know, whatever people. We all have the same bones, by the way, that healing is available to us. After my husband died, I did have a mini nervous breakdown. Oh. And yeah, I mean, it was hard. I had two kids in college and one in high school. And it was like, you know, the money thing was going to be really hard, and just all of it. And I did reinvent myself. But along the way, I did some therapy, which did not work for me. And it just made me feel worse, by the way, because I was tagged. You're this, that. You know, I had ADHD. Hello, I'm quite fidgety. I think I have all the signs for a woman with the ADHD, but I had some insomnia going on. I did have some depression. I just, you know, I had some things going on, and I'm so on the other side of all of that. I have healed, and I'm still healing. But when I found hypnotherapy, I'm like, whoa, this is life-changing. And it was really, you know, I started with, why am I sabotaging myself? Meaning, why am I a people pleaser? Why, you know, I couldn't even take a compliment. So I did my first session about, you know, why am I sabotaging myself? And it went back to something with my mother, just being a mom and saying, you know, I was naughty, by the way, this is really important for parents. How kids get attention is, there's the achiever, the golden child, right? Getting loved by being good. There's the rebel. Negative attention is still attention. There's the hurt one, the sick one. When a child is hurt or has a rash or a fever, mom and dad, or mom and mom, or dad and dad have to kind of drop everything they're doing for the sick child. Or if there's a child who has special needs or something, they get more attention, so it takes away from the other. Then there's the caretaker or the funny one. So those roles are how we get attention from our parents or our caregivers. And negative attention is still attention. So anyway, when I was little, this is one of my memories, my big significant, why am I sabotaging myself? I pushed my little friend against the refrigerator. This is in my memory, my subconscious mind. I was 5, and I don't know why I pushed her, but I pushed her. And I wasn't a mean girl, but I probably was hurting because I had a sick mother.
Yep.
But I didn't know that, right? So my mom sent my little friend home and said, scooted me on the butt. It was 1971, and said, go to your room, shame on you. And then she died. So my imprint was I had toxic shame for 40 something years until I did the healing. And I was a people pleaser and a doormat. And I, you know, we have to look at healing that, because she was just doing her mom job. I wasn't a bad child. I was just being naughty, probably for attention. And when I found all this, and I've done a ton of healing and heart healing, I do want to tap into that a little bit. But I looked at, my husband had a heart attack at 53. And if he could have done the inner healing, instead of going outward, we have to go inward. And that's what I help people do with the, it's called rapid transformational therapy or heart healing. We do regression, and we look back at these significant imprints that hurt us. It's like part work or shadow work. And in heart healing, which I think would be really beneficial for a lot of everybody, just everybody, okay? Because we all have pain, emotional wounds, is instead of just looking at, like, why am I sabotaging? We look at love, trust, acceptance, and worthiness in the heart. That's the four chambers of the heart. And why I don't feel enough, but it's someone, it's the relationship wound who made us feel that way. So in the heart, and we look at, well, also what happened to them that made them that way. So if it's like from the 70s and people are not open to, you know, having a gay child, or they're very religious or whatever it is, we have to look at them, because maybe it's not about us. And then we heal at a soul level. We think, what would that person, one of us, from the soul, the unwounded version of them. And we venture on, we give the child, the hurt child, a voice. We heal with love. Everything comes from love. And as we venture on, you meet your future self in the heart. And there's advice and love, and it's really amazing. So there's the healing all comes from love, but I help people help themselves, because sometimes we're stuck and we don't know why, or sometimes we think we know why, and there's something that the subconscious is keeping us that way. Whatever the self-sabotaging behavior, that's the big umbrella. So procrastination, anxiety, addiction, you know, I can help someone quit smoking like that.
Can you help someone quit drinking?
Yeah, that's my very favorite thing to do. Yeah, but that's more than one session. And I do have a signature program, and I have no agenda here, but I would tell, like, my son, who'd say, mom, like, my Instagram, like, oh, da, 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 da. I am never selling, I'm serving.
Okay, y'all. So this is where I cut the episode, like I talked about in the intro. This is where we get into the hypnotherapy talk and the emotional healing and parenting through difficult seasons. It's actually a really interesting conversation, but it just didn't fit the theme of the show. So if you're interested in hearing more about Melissa's work with hypnotherapy, you can just head to my Patreon. It's going to be free there. You can watch it or listen there. Patreon at the Queer Family Podcast, and go check that out. It's a quick little 15-minute convo, but I found it very insightful. So if you want to hear it, go check it out. Okay.
Queer Family Podcast.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.